We've heard his opinion about New Zealand's coronavirus success in recent weeks. Dr. Johan Giesecke is a Swedish physician and Professor Emeritus at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. He's been Sweden's top virus expert, and he reckons lockdowns like the one we've just had are merely a way of delaying the inevitable. New Zealand could face years of having to quarantine people entering the country. Professor Johan Giesecke, good morning.
Good morning.
In a nutshell, I think you say lockdowns do not prevent surges in cases or deaths from coronavirus, but merely delay them?
Well, they do control the surges a bit, because you do slow down transmission when you have a lockdown, and you slow it down more the more severe your lockdown is. But you're pushing your cases and your deaths into the future. They're not disappearing.
So your Scandinavian neighbours, with their lower case rates and fatality rates, will catch up to yours at some point, perhaps when the coronavirus is embedded, if we don't get a vaccine. That's what you think?
Yes, I'm quite certain that they will climb up to close to our figures. And I think that's true for almost any country in Europe. It may not be true for your country, but for most countries in Europe, it will be about the same. I talked to the state epidemiologist for Finland a couple of days ago, and he was really depressed because Finland has been very successful in diminishing transmission. So they have these huge susceptible people, and when they're opening up now, he was foreseeing quite a lot of new cases in Finland, and he felt that WHO should have taken another approach from the beginning, but that's another story.
So are you saying the state epidemiologist of Finland is coming round to your point of view?
Yes.
You'll be looking at the countries coming out of lockdown too early because they've decided they have to, you know, Russia, Germany, South Korea, parts of the US, with cases resurgent, and you'll be thinking you were right as well?
Yes, unfortunately, yes, I will think I was right, yes.
Every week we talk to our public health physician, Professor Michael Baker, whom you know. He was at your institute on sabbatical, I think.
Yes, we've been in each other's homes, actually. I spent a week in Auckland lecturing with him some years ago, and then he made a return visit to Stockholm a couple years ago.
He says what you have there may suit Sweden, but we have a chance of eliminating the virus. But you don't think so, do you? You think we're kidding ourselves in the long run?
Well, if a good vaccine comes out relatively soon, then I think you made the right choice. If you manage to keep New Zealand virus-free for some time. But if the vaccine doesn't come around, and if it's not very good, then you do have a problem. I have a question for you. These planes that are bringing kiwi fruit to China from New Zealand, which is a regular, and also to the Middle East, I learned, the pilots, the crews for these planes who come back from China to the islands, are they quarantined 2 weeks?
No, they aren't. But they think it, well, they are if they catch the virus. Of course, they're quarantined. But the thinking is that contact tracing, I think, is very easy for the crews of planes.
Okay, so they're not put into quarantine, and if they develop symptoms, you start contact tracing for them.
Yeah, that's right.
Or around them. Okay, yeah. But it's an interesting breach of the quarantine. I just read The Economist the other day, and they bring this up.
Yes. Now, I'm sure people wonder about breaches of quarantine and what will happen as the months go on with that too. That's the other aspect. So without a vaccine, and I notice there's more pessimism about a vaccine right now, there will eventually be pressure on New Zealand to relax quarantines at the border? You don't think we can keep this up indefinitely?
Seems difficult. I couldn't tell you what to do or not to do, but only for tourism it would be a big thing that everyone has to spend 2 weeks at the airport in Auckland before they can go out into the country. No, I think it's impossible in a Western democracy. You could do it in China, you can't do it in New Zealand.
So no vaccine, and if we can't do it forever, what will happen to case numbers in New Zealand? I mean, will we be as susceptible with the same sort of result as just about everywhere else?
Yes, I can't see any difference. But of course you could do it in a very slow way, opening up the lockdown. You take away one restriction, you could control the number of cases, I think, by the restrictions you keep. So you're almost like a thermostat, that if there are too many cases, you turn it down a bit. If there are cases are going down, you turn it down. I think you could control that and do this over a couple of years, maybe.
So does that mean that there is a good reason the world is applauding New Zealand? We've given ourselves breathing space and we're more ready for the virus if it comes back, more aware of the dangers in the population. That's the riposte to your general position on our country, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, you're right. And I don't think you're alone. I think Iceland will do the same thing, another island nation. They will succeed in stamping out the virus now, but they live from tourism and they would find it difficult, I think, to have a quarantine for a long time.
Yeah, we live on tourism too. As with Iceland, I suppose the economic turmoil from tourism would have occurred anyway because it was inevitable. We just couldn't travel to other countries and they wouldn't travel to us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What about contamination from freight or cargo or asymptomatic flight crew or VIPs secretly fast-tracked into a country and so on?
Well, that would always be a problem. But, I mean, if you really had managed to stamp the virus out from the islands, like you said, single introductions would not be a big problem. You'd find them when they develop symptoms and you do contact tracing. And so I think that would work. That bit would work.
So you seem to have mellowed on your position as reported in New Zealand media that eventually said we were on a kind of pleasant fool's errand. You're kind of thinking now that we're doing the right thing?
For you it might be, but it's not solving the problem. I mean, the problem will come back to haunt you in the long run.
Michael Baker says we'll know in a year's time who was right and who was wrong with the containment.
I agree with that.
Do you? Yeah.
I agree with, well, lots of discussions we're having now about the proper strategy. We'll have some kind of an answer a year from now. But it's too early to start discussing the strategies now. You can't compare them yet.
One of our listeners named Ash says, to have the possibility of trying the herd immunity strategy like Sweden, I don't know if you agree with that definition, a country has to have a fit-for-purpose health system with enough ICU beds and so on. Was Sweden prepared in the way he suggests? Because I think your state epidemiologist Anders Tegnell thought the peak of your curve was in early March, and he was wrong, and you stopped testing at one stage, didn't you, and restarted it. So you've made mistakes.
Oh, yes. The biggest one is that we were not able to protect the old and vulnerable people the way we had hoped to. But that's extremely difficult, and I'm not sure of any country that has really succeeded there. You can see now that the number of cases is going down, the number of deaths are going down, the number of ICU beds occupied are going down. And I think most countries could quite easily increase the ICU capacity. Sweden did it, trebled its capacity in 2 weeks. I mean, turned ordinary wards into ICU wards. So we started with maybe 200 beds and now we're about 500-600 beds. But we're only using half of them now.
Is it going down or is it up and down? Our listeners are quite fascinated by Sweden. I think the world is. And they have chimed in on this. Sweden's death rate per million people higher than the US is one of the top seven countries in this regard. It has to be acknowledged that stricter lockdowns are working best across the world. Finland, which you've mentioned, has one-tenth the rate of mortality. But another listener, David from Dunedin, says Sweden gets 1,200 deaths per week in normal times, no change there. Can you enlighten us? Who is right about this in terms of your stats?
Normally, about 300 people die every day in Sweden. We have a population of 10 million, and if you do some arithmetic, you see too that it will be about 300 cases per day in a normal year. You can see the increase in deaths from the COVID epidemic, no question. It's visible if you look at overall deaths in Sweden, you can see there's a peak happening right now.
Yes, I saw a peak happening right now. That's why I mentioned the up and down. So are you convinced that you're evening out, that you're on a downward curve? It doesn't seem that way.
Well, these are statistically seen, regarded, these are quite small numbers. There are up and downs, but if you look over a couple of weeks' time, you see that there is a decrease.
Professor Johan Giesecke is talking to us. There is a suspicion, perhaps, that ideology as well as science is behind the Swedish approach, that you consigned your elderly to their fate, not intentionally, but you put an economic price on human life. And 2,000 Swedish researchers and scientists said more or less that. Did you do that?
No, that list, by the way, is a fake. There are people on the list that don't exist, and they're certainly not scientists. And I don't know where it came from. Anyway, that's neither here, but that's a fake. No, I don't think we're sacrificing the old to reach herd immunity, like everyone is saying. There are so many restrictions that are being applied in different countries that lack totally all scientific evidence. There are two things that have scientific evidence. Number one is wash your hands often. We've known that for 150 years, actually. The other is keep your social distance. That's also been proven. But things like border closure, closing of schools, such things, there's no science at all behind them. And the decision in Sweden was don't do things that lack all scientific foundation, which other countries have. I think the proof, the bringing out the evidence should be with the countries who apply a severe lockdown. Where do they have the evidence that their restrictions work, that they have any meaning? I mean, if you look at the UK, who has a severe lockdown since early March, they have more deaths and more cases in old people than Sweden has, although they've had the lockdown all the time. The same goes for Ireland, I think.
The argument with the UK, of course, is that they locked down late. They had half a thought of doing what you're doing and then changed their minds.
That's true. That's true. They made a U-turn. But I think they kept what people now call the Swedish model for only a week before they made the U-turn. It wasn't very long anyway.
When you say there's no science behind all the isolation techniques being tried, that's based on that thesis which we've already canvassed with you, that in the end the virus creeps back in a second wave or insinuates itself again into a society, yeah?
Yes. I think that in principle, everyone in the world will be exposed to this virus sooner or later. And that's the way. And the second thing is, it's mostly a very mild disease. Some people don't even realize that they have it. And then there is a small percentage who get ill and an even smaller percentage who die. But the main pandemic is going on where we don't see it in people with very little symptoms who never approach healthcare.
I know, but it's also going on, and very distressingly, in the ICUs of the world. And, you know, very brave doctors and nurses are sacrificing their lives to fight it. And I imagine that's the same in Sweden, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
A good question for you is that I imagine a situation where the virus has taken the life of not an elderly person, you know, already in the waiting room, as it were, to die, but a young sufferer, and maybe the family stands in front of you and says, why? Why? What would your reply be then?
I would say in such a situation that this would probably have happened anyway, because the virus will expose, the disease will expose everyone. And something that happens now, which is very unfortunate, could have happened next month when we open up the lockdown a bit.
As you say, we will see. What about the modelling for the US and the UK? I think you've quarrelled with the Imperial College modelling that forecast 500,000 UK deaths in a worst-case scenario, and 2 million in the US, I think.
Yeah. It was never published, the Imperial model, properly in a scientific paper. It's not been peer-reviewed, and these are boring matters, but they are important when you do science. The main problem that the Imperial paper has is that it underestimates the number of cases that are light or not severe and that do not bring people to the healthcare system. And if you underestimate that, as they have done quite a lot, then you get problems at the end of the calculations.
And would you say the same applies to New Zealand? We had early worst-case modelling of 100,000 and then it gradually went down. Were those figures hyperbole as well?
Yes. And it's the same now when you calculate mortality. You divide the number of deaths by the number of cases, but the number of cases is grossly underestimated because you don't have the light cases in those numbers, which brings up the death rate quite a lot.
As I said, Sweden intrigues the world. Although, you know, I just got to go back to that list of 2,000, which you say a lot of the names were fake on, but there still were a number of, presumably, a number of reputable scientists and researchers who were severely critical of the government's approach here.
Yeah? Oh, yes. I mean, as late as yesterday in our main broadsheet, there's a group of 22 that have been quite active. They published again and said that Sweden is doing it wrong and we should be much more active. But I mean, this is the lack of science makes it easier to have a debate where you can air your guesses and hunches. And this is a democracy. Of course, the people should be allowed to have a different meaning, different opinion.
It's a democracy in which people, the media report on Sweden at the moment and analyse what you're doing, and they say, well, a whole lot of Swedes live alone and Swedes are naturally more obedient. They listen to their public figures more. Is that right? Because every society, you would think, has quite a big percentage of people who aren't obedient and who won't do as they're told. Isn't that borne out by your high caseload and the high number of fatalities?
No, and I think that the Swedish model could have worked very well in New Zealand, from what I remember from my visit. People are not stupid. If they're told that this is the way you could protect yourself and this is the way you protect others, they will understand and then they will do what you ask them to do. We don't need police in the street asking you if you're going to the pharmacy or not. We don't need fines for people who are outside when they shouldn't be outside. Most people are not stupid.
You're an idealist.
I think. No, but seriously, I think this would have worked in New Zealand. I'm quite sure it would.
In a year's time or 18 months' time or whenever, if you're wrong, you'd be prepared to say, and along with Anders Tegnell, you'd be prepared to say, actually, we got it wrong. We should have locked down more severely. There's a vaccine now. We could have saved more lives. So you would be prepared to change your position at the end of the day.
Of course, I would admit defeat if I'm completely wrong, but I'm quite sure I'm not. And setting your hope to the vaccine, that it takes much longer than anyone thinks it does. That's number one. Number two is a more technical thing, and that is that having the natural infection gives you a broader immunity than a vaccine. If you had measles once in your life, you'll never get it again. Does the measles vaccine offer the same protection? Doubtful. So if we now say that the immunity to COVID is not very good, it's weak and it's not long-lasting, that's bad news for the vaccine. Natural infection doesn't really give immunity, then it's very difficult to find a vaccine that gives immunity.
Good talking to you. There's a long way to run with this, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a long way to run. I agree with you. And in the end, I think, my guess, you know, there are four coronaviruses that that only give you a common cold.
Mm.
And my guess is that this one will, in a couple of years or maybe longer time, become more and more benign. And maybe in 5-10 years' time, it would be the fifth of the common cold viruses that we have every year.
You think it'll attenuate and weaken?
Yes, that's my guess. But that's a complete guess. I don't know. I don't have any scientific foundation at all for that, but it's my guess.
It's good to end on something optimistic there.
Yes.
Hey, thank you for your time. I appreciate you talking to us.
Thanks. It's been quite pleasant. And please give my regards to Michael when you meet him next.
Yes, he's on later this morning with us, as a matter of fact.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Professor Johan Giesecke. Actually, Air New Zealand's given us a statement about the flight crews coming back, and Air New Zealand's strictly following the advice to air crew from the Ministry of Health to keep its customers and crew safe regarding self-isolation, hygiene, PPE use. Crew who follow the precautions correctly and are well are exempt from the requirement to self-isolate. During layovers, they remain in their rooms at all times, but may go outside for a walk or to find food because restaurants within many hotels are closed. While outside their rooms, crew must adhere to physical distancing rules and wear masks.